Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Every week, we produce a podcast called Democracy in Crisis, co-hosted by Baynard Woods, where we critically examine the Trump administration week by week. You can listen to all of them at democracyincrisis.com, on SoundCloud, on iTunes, or anywhere you get your podcast. And here's the latest episode of Democracy in Crisis.
This is Democracy in Crisis. I'm Baynard Woods.
And I'm Mark Steiner here for The Mark Steiner Show and the Center for Emerging Media.
And I mean, it's a good thing it's the Center for Emerging Media because this is the news is emerging.
The news has emerged.
It's emerging insanely around us, I feel like. I mean, so yesterday we had Sally Yates and Clapper testified before the Senate. So remember, Yates was supposed to testify. She was the assistant attorney general.
Who became the acting attorney general.
Who became an acting
attorney general. Who was fired by Trump because she wouldn't do what Trump asked her to do.
On the issue of the travel ban.
Right.
Which there was a remarkable moment where she really showed Ted Cruz up on the travel ban in her testimony yesterday, which was amazing. And this was about her revelations to the Trump administration or the Trump transition team that Mike Flynn had been, who was the national security advisor, had been compromised by the Russians. And
she told the administration 18 days ahead of time.
18 days before they ended up firing him.
Right.
And then in the meantime, if you look at what happened in those 18 days between when he was fired and when she made the statement to them, they had a call with Putin that he was on.
Right.
And reporters today at the press briefing were really pushing Spicer, like, did y'all take away any of his clearance after that revelation? Because Spicer's, you know, and slightly legitimate response initially was like, well, look, this is an enemy of the president, appointed by the previous president, supporter of Clinton, and we aren't going to just jump up and fire one of our top guys immediately without checking it out, just because she says so. But they said, well, did you at least like, whoa, let's roll back his clearance and see, or whatever. And so Trump seems to be freaking out about it.
About this particular thing right now.
Yeah, I mean, so yesterday morning he started tweeting before it even happened, trying to attack Yates. He changed the background of his Twitter to be a quote about, see, Clapper says there's no evidence of Russian collusion. So his Twitter is making him seem nervous, I think. And then today Lindsey Graham comes out and calls for an investigation. Lindsey Graham, who was the one who actually chaired the committee that had Yates come in, called for an investigation into Trump's business ties with Russia. So this thing really seems to be moving.
It's unraveling bit by bit, and has been unraveling, as we talked about here and other places. It takes a while for these things to really happen, to really come into a place where they could do serious hearings. When you think about Watergate, it didn't happen overnight, right? Though I don't know what this is all going to really mean. Director Clapper reiterated what everybody, including the fake media, already knows. There's no evidence of collusion with Russia and Trump, says Trump.
Yeah. And, I mean, one of the things that's astounding in this and scary about this is we don't know. We know the DNC was hacked because all that material was released. But we don't know. Ted Cruz, who's on this committee, was also running for president at the time.
Right.
Lindsey Graham, in fact, who was chairing the committee, was also running for president early in the race.
Right.
How many of these people were hacked? How do we know that? I mean, during the hearing, it was so partisan with the Republicans not, other than Graham, not wanting to ask about Russia at all. And again, focusing on unmasking and leaking to the press. And, you know, and for what it's worth, both Yates and Clapper said they had never been a confidential source to anyone in the media.
Under oath, they said it, by the way.
Yeah, under oath. Yeah. And so I mean, this is really, I think it really is the getting to the place where you've got to have a special prosecutor or an independent commission like we had with 9/11, like with Watergate. Like, we've got to have something that gets it out of. I mean, the reason that Yates hasn't already testified was because Nunes pulled all of those bizarre antics on the House Intelligence Committee of colluding with Trump when Trump was the person under investigation. So,
and so Trump goes on and says, second tweet said, Sally Yates made the fake media extremely unhappy today. She said nothing but old news, also a lie.
Yeah.
Right? And the Russia-Trump collusion is a total hoax. When will this taxpayer-funded charade end? says your president.
I mean, so you remember Watergate when it was unfolding and without 24-hour coverage, and the president who's tweeting and all of that sort of stuff.
This is before tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
BT before tweets.
How did the time feel? I mean, in retrospect to you now, the time between, can you recall, between first starting to hear words of the break-in and then as it was mounting, like how did it feel for you watching?
Oh no, I mean it was. It's interesting. It's an interesting question because things don't unfold as rapidly as you just said as they do at the moment with tweeting and the 24-hour news cycle and the rest. But I remember it being really aware that that something was unraveling in the Nixon administration. They were going to get him. They weren't playing around with this, you know. And those of us who really despised his presidency at the time were really overjoyed. We saw this happening. Did not expect it to end up in the impeachment the way it did, but it did, you know. And I think, but what's happening is, what changes this is, the investigations are happening in the same time frame as other investigations do. It's just that our media technology and our media, the overarching media presence that's all around us, just makes it feel like it's moving at some pace where it's not. You know what I'm saying? It's just it's in our face.
And I feel like that started a little bit with Clinton as well, that the Whitewater investigation ended up leading to the Lewinsky stuff, and it feels like that dominated and occupied the national, at least parts of the national conversation for a good 4 years or something. A number, you know, it was really slow, drawn out, but it was constantly being sort of yelled about on cable.
Right.
And now we're at the point where Tom Nichols, who just had the book on the death of expertise, was teaches at the Naval College, was a prominent never Trumper. In the he had a tweet stream yesterday talking about when he was in, what would you call it, a freelancer for the CIA in the 80s and a sort of criminologist, that, you know, how much they would have loved had they been able to have Soviet leaders tweeting, because you can tell so much about the real-time unfolding of someone's mind that they would have loved to have that as intelligence, and that we're just giving all of this intelligence, showing our, you know, adversaries or whatever, what the president thinks like in a crisis.
I don't know, what does he think like in a crisis? He tweets. I bet the tweets give solace and fuel to the people who love him. I mean, he hasn't lost that much support among the people who really supported him from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even talked to you since I went to that Harrisburg rally.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I went in, Soderberg stayed outside, but I went in disguise inside to just see and bought a regular ticket, didn't go reserved a regular ticket and didn't go in as press. And, they did still very much love him, but it was it felt like in a different way. You know, it did feel like they still loved their ideas and they loved hating the media and stuff, but it's all about being against. It's almost like there's no center to be for.
Right. What did you pass yourself off as?
So I wore my Willie Nelson shirt that I've had for a long time. So old, my chest hairs stick through and look like Willie's beard, you know. And...
I'm glad I wasn't there.
and baseball cap and stuff. So I looked sort of like the Willie Nelson weed smoking wing gun toting kind of Republican. And I was going to pass myself off as a musician sort of guy. You know?
Wouldn't have been lying.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been lying at all. I didn't want to get into the conversation about being pressed because that's just an old conversation. I wanted to hear really what people were. But there was a certain lack of enthusiasm that was interesting. There was still a lot of enthusiasm, but I do feel like it's harder and harder for him to keep. Yeah, it's like he's given him that shot with the tweets, but it's harder to keep it going when you're also invading, you know, bombing countries, or you're also...
He's picking up steam in Afghanistan and Syria everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, Obama will shortly pale in comparison to his interventions around the world, I have a feeling.
I mean, so one of the most interesting things he said in recent weeks was when he said, Well, I'm a globalist and a nationalist. Or I forget. I'm not quoting exactly. I forget which was first, a nationalist and a globalist, or a globalist and a nationalist. And that got a lot of his super right-wing supporters really upset. Or not super right-wing, a lot of the sort of deplorable wing of, and not the neocon wing of the Republicans, really, you know, the Bannonites are really upset about that. And yet they're all the ones who are also really pushing for Le Pen in France last week. And so there is this strange globalist nationalist movement.
Absolutely there is. I mean, they feel connected to all these groups, and they were probably devastated when Le Pen was thrashed by the centrist.
Right?
I mean, you know, the other story this week also, we were just talking about before we started this conversation, was your boy Jeff Sessions.
Yeah.
And want to kind of bring back serious penalties for low-level drug offenses.
Mandatory minimums.
And Maxine Waters called him out, said, she's on a tear these days anyway. I think he's a racist. Think? You think he is? Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, as soon as they nominated Sessions, I was just a chill went up my spine, because he is a racist and a nationalist, and he doesn't care about locking up black folks. That's all he cares. And disenfranchising black voters. I mean,
it's not that he doesn't care about it. He's passionate
about it, right? But quietly, so he will never admit. You know, he's like he doesn't wear the robe. He's nothing external. He's very polished.
Yeah, I mean, but he's, in a way, but he's been, you know, remember for the last 20 years, he's been a crank in the back of the Senate, giving speeches, railing, you know, saying his crazy racist states' rights. And now the one place where he's against states' rights is on medical marijuana,
He wants to bust people.
Yeah, I think he wants to bust people for that. We just had a great story written by James Burbert that came out on Democracy in Crisis this morning about the defendants who were arrested on Inauguration Day. So they've brought seven new charges against the people who were actually caught that day. They raided the homes of other people that were a guy who facilitated and hosted the meeting where people were planning it. They got him with conspiracy charges, and they're all facing 75 years in prison now on these charges. The other woman with Code Pink, who laughed during Sessions' confirmation, was arrested and is facing a year in prison.
Was just arraigned.
Disrupting the Senate, some kind of disruption charge. And she had a really spectacular first-person piece in Vox today, a day or so ago. And, I mean, it's just insane. Her name is Desiree Ferruz, and she was at the... I mean, there were people there protesting at Sessions' confirmation from Code Pink, which is Medea Benjamin's activist group founded by Medea Benjamin, and there were people dressed up in Klan robes so that when Sessions walked in, they're like, hey, old buddy! But she was just sitting there peacefully, and when he, what was it that made her laugh? It's really a remarkable moment, but it was something about him being a racist, and it's disorderly conduct and disruptive conduct.
Right.
And one of parading or demonstrating on Capitol grounds. And so she's going to get sentenced next month, and she might get sentenced up to a year. So this is 75 years for the people who were arrested en masse, for 200 people arrested on mass charges, plus then this one person with a year for, I mean, we're waiting in some ways. People are waiting for the bad things to happen and the fascist stuff to happen. And I feel like it's happening, and we're not noticing in a way that's
because it's for a couple of reasons. One, it's seeping in. It's not this loud bang of getting arresting hundreds of thousands of people. It's hundreds and thousands, and because it's happening to people that people don't see as mainstream, they're not that focused on it, and nobody's paying so much attention to Donald Trump's tweeting and idiocies that we're not paying attention to things like Jeff Sessions and what he's doing.
And it's I mean, Trump attacks CNN and all of them as the fake news all the time. And, like, you know, I've been saying ever since that started, I hate CNN. You know, when they came here to Baltimore during the uprising, they were terrible. They immediately went into West Baltimore with security guards around them.
Geraldo?
And no, that was for Fox. He was
Geraldo's
even worse.
Fox.
But Sean Young immediately grabbed the microphone away from I forgot what the correspondent's name is. I sometimes hesitate to even use reporters of because these people are reality show stars like Trump in some ways. And so we all got outraged when they wouldn't call on Jim Acosta at the press conference and called him fake news. But like, where's Jim Acosta standing up for the reporters who were arrested on Inauguration Day? You know, and we're focused still. We're making it part of the reality show, and we're focusing on the famous people instead of the people who are getting arrested. And yes, Sessions carrying the alt-right banner, and people are like, "Oh, Bannon's out," which I also think is nonsense.
He's not out.
Yeah, he's not out at all. I mean, people think are saying he doesn't have influence anymore. You keep him out of the limelight.
He's got a ton of influence. He just happens to be. I mean, he's in a battle with others over who's going to influence Trump the most. You know, and Bannon has his days, and then the others have their days.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the real important thing here is we always focus on the most inflammatory news of the moment and not on what's seeping. I keep saying seeping under the wire we're not watching.
Yeah.
I mean, people are not, don't seem to be as roiled about Sessions and what he's doing to think about incarcerating more people of color in this country for minor crimes than we are about Trump's tweeting about Yates.
Right. Right at the moment that we start to have the conversation about prison reform.
Right.
You know, we then have, and trying to end this idea of mass incarceration, we then have Sessions coming out. And even if he doesn't end up going through with it, the report is that he's re-examining Holder's order not to seek mandatory minimums for low-level drug charges. So even if he goes decides to keep with that, it's still a flirting with and a testing the waters of. And that's why people, I think, need to be out on the streets over this. Like, okay, if they're going to, the Justice Department needs to have mass protest every day if they're going to, until they decide they're going to not start mandatory minimums. I mean, you better go out there while you can. You know, before we're locked up over this stuff. And let's don't forget, Sessions is involved in the Russia stuff to tie our two things together. Sessions is one of the people
who accuse himself
because of his involvement meeting with Kislyak, who is the same person that compromised Mike Flynn.
Well, Bannon, I think we're going to be busy for the next few years.
Yeah.
Here's Democracy in Crisis. So I think we didn't tell our listeners. Well, they can always check you out.
Yeah, so Democracy in Crisis. You can check out our website at democracyincrisis.com. It's getting rebuilt. It'll be snazzier soon. And then in numerous alt-weeklies around the country, the Charleston City Paper, Baltimore City Paper, Washington City Paper, Nashville Scene, the Jackson Hole Planet, Boston Dig. So check us in your local alternative news weekly. And this is Baynard Woods with Democracy in Crisis.
And this is Mark Steiner for The Mark Steiner Show and the Center for Emerging Media.
Much love and grim solidarity. And we go out with a treat from Ruby Fulton.
All right, let's do that.
Biggest story today between Clapper and Yates is on surveillance. Why doesn't the media report on this? Hashtag fake news, 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 hashtag fake news.
That was the latest episode of Democracy in Crisis. You can hear new episodes of the show and read Baynard Woods' column every week at democracyincrisis.com. We're about to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll reach deep into our archives, a 1998 conversation with the world-famous Baltimore filmmaker John Waters about his book, Director's Cut.